on the platform, DM Swane. And then the leadership of Transnet, the minister will introduce who's accompanying him from Transnet. I know the group CEO is there, but let's leave that for the for the presentation. You are all welcome. The meeting is truly open. Can I check, Mashile? Apologies.
Yeah, good morning again. We have one apology from Mr. Murray.
Okay, let's note that apology. Again, you are welcome, honourable members. We have got an agenda in front of you, but the main thing today, as well, considering the 22 Special Appropriation Bill, is to engage with the Minister of Public Enterprises and Transnet. This is a follow-up to the Special Appropriation Bill, which was tabled by the Minister of Finance on the 26th of October during the MTBBS, and as a process of considering, as part of considering the bill, we have requested the Minister and Transnet to appear before us. Minister, you are welcome. We'll hand over to you and the team. You the team of Transnet will give you about 45 minutes maximum for the presentation. You don't have to take all of it, and which then will expect responses if there are questions which are being asked. Minister, please come in. Mashile, do I have Honorable Godan on the platform? Okay, let me check. Do you have the
he's trying to level here the PLO. He's trying to to connect. I'm also just gonna quickly check with him. My apologies about that.
Okay, let's give the honorable minister a few minutes so that he can connect. Honorable Sheikh, how are you?
Honorable Jefferson, how are you?
Honorable Dehale, good morning. Welcome back.
Thank you so much.
How are you?
I'm fine, and how are you? 10 o'clock, I have another meeting. Okay. I'll be running away from this one.
Okay, thank you. No, that's an apology, I suppose, should note, Mashile, that Honorable Dehale has indicated that she'll leave us at 10.
Yes, it's noted, Chair.
Thank you.
Sorry, Chairperson.
Thank you, Julius.
I'm attending the works meeting and also police, the crime statistics being released, but I will be in and out in any case. I will be here for the best part of the most part of the meeting. Thank you.
Thank you so much, Honorable Sheikh. We'll just give the minister a few minutes trying to connect. Mashile.
Yes, Chair.
What is the PLO saying?
Yeah, I'm trying to get hold of him, but I think he's busy. Maybe he's trying to connect with the with the minister.
Let me check. CEO, Group CEO Trustnet, are you?
Good morning, Honorable Chair.
Yeah, I can't push.
How are you?
Good, how are you?
Good.
But shouldn't we start, because the minister is struggling, then when he comes in, we'll see what to do.
Okay,
he may make his input at the end of your presentation.
Okay,
okay.
No, that's fine.
Okay. Welcome, Transnet, Team Transnet. You introduce your team, as I said, we'll give you 45 minutes maximum. Then you'll decide if you are taking the whole presentation, it's you, but just bring back my meeting back to me after 45 minutes. Good.
Thank you, Honorable Member, Members. On our side, I hope you're putting the presentation on. Okay. On our side, Honorable Members, we've got, I don't actually know who's on from Transnet other than the following people. Susan Zamela, the CEO of TFR, Sandra Kutsia, our Group Chief Legal Officer, as well as Nungule Gudlamin, who's our Group Chief Financial Officer. I hope I haven't left out anyone. And then Ayanda Shin, who is our Head of Corporate Affairs, as well as our spokesperson as well. So, Honorable Members, if I may, Chair, I'm setting my 45 minutes so that I don't overstep. If I may have the presentation, please. So the brief that we received was to cover the following areas: the financial performance of Transnet for the past 3 years, but we've also tried to go a little bit further back to show the situation, the reasons for the 2.9 billion rand requested from National Treasury, as well as the allocation, how it will be used. In your letter, you wrote there's the possibility of bailout requests, and I would say a shareholder has to invest, but let's not start a new politic on that one. And then some sense of what Transnet's loan book looks like, revenue projections, and these are previous corporate plan forecasts. This is not the latest. Obviously, we don't make the corporate plan public, but rather our audited financial statements is what we make available. If you can please go to the next slide. So we start off the presentation, Chair, by focusing on the settlement with the local the locomotive manufacturers, the OEMs. The review application was launched in March 2021, and that was with respect to the 1,064 locomotives that we had ordered from initially for OEMs, which was GE at the time, Bombardier, CSR, as well as CNR. Subsequent to the event, actually, there's been mergers right across the board or sales. The GE locals business was sold to a company called Wabtec. So you'll see the reference to Wabtec. Bombardier merged with Alstom. So you'll see Bombardier, Alstom everywhere. And CNR and CSR merged to form one entity, which is called CRRC. So a settlement has been reached basically with GE Wabtec, because in any event, they had delivered all of the locos on their side. And this is in process to get towards a court order. We've signed all of the agreement documents. And to our minds, we have reached a just and settlement, a just and equitable settlement. In the case of Bombardier, Alstom, and CRRC, we have reached in principle agreement. In the case of CRRC, to our mind, we are at a definitive settlement agreement. In the case of Bombardier Alstom, we are in the next couple of days should be able to arrive at what we would regard as a definitive settlement agreement. So there's progress in as far as that's concerned. But I'll come back because there may be progress, but there are definite serious challenges in particular with regard to CRRC. So further to the settlement on the contractual, on the supply of the new locals, is the additional requirement for us to get to a what was called an MRSA, which is a material reliability and support agreement that we need to reach with every single one of the OEMs. In the case of the Chinese, we believe that we've now got a definitive agreement. WebTech, we've got a proposal, and we should be able to arrive at an agreement with them. And as well as Bombardier Alstom will close that off as part of the settlement. Hopefully, by January next year, we would have reached agreement. To be frank, I think it's a lot more hopeful on all of the other OEMs except for CRRC. They definitely some support, it's some hard work is still has to be done. In the case of CRC, there's still the matter of them receiving a valid tax certificate from SARS, and then Saab, the Reserve Bank, has to lift the restrictions on the CRRC accounts, allowing us in truth to import components and repair, and for them to be able to repatriate funds to China. Next slide, please. And that's where there's a bit of a deadlock. This slide basically was going through the process over the last couple of years, and it's basically an illustration of what I've just spoken to in the previous slide, where in large measure, the bigger requirement and why we focus on CRRC is because CRRC, their locals go to the North Corridor. And in the case of BT, and in fact, CRRC is a OEM that we've previously used at Transnet. We've got two other contracts prior to the 1,064, which was a 95 supply and 100 in the previous period. So by the time we get to Treasury, one of the big requirements that we had as we were looking at the funds that we needed to bring back to service all of the longstanding locals, we approached National Treasury last year to see if they would consider giving us some funding to be able to fund the return to service of all of the longstanding locals and also enable us to close off on the settlements as we move towards the closure, the legal closure of the review process. If you go, I think, if you can please go to the next slide. I mean, I think we've indicated the issues that we're able to get to this point of negotiations with both the Chinese CRRC as well as BT Alstom, because they've basically self-reported to the Hawks. And that self-report is a crucial element, and we have no clue what the self-report is, obviously, because it's confidential. But I thought it would be important, and if you please excuse me, Chair, this is a slide I added, because I thought it would be important for the members to be able to see the situation with the longstanding locals. As of the 21st of November, we had 315 longstanding locals. Now, this is really a problem, because if I tell you that in about 3 weeks ago, we were probably at 308 longstanding locals. And this is a figure that grows and shrinks on the back of, are we able to get components and parts? And whenever we get components and parts, we are able to deal with this. And I think this, I hope, also illustrates why we needed that 2.9 billion. So in terms of the 315 is made up of 43 Ds. Ds are diesels and Es are electrics, WebTech locals. 44 Ds from WebTech locals, which are longstanding that needs to be maintained. This in part requires us to get to closure on the maintenance agreement with WebTech so that we can accelerate the delivery of the parts that we require for returning the locals to service. In the case of CRRC, we've got, and then the D45, would have been supplied by CNR, and 15 of the 22 locos that CNR has ever supplied to us are longstanding. In the case of CNR, when we've spoken to CRRC, we've indicated that we want to cancel that contract because of the 300 odd or so locos that we were supposed to receive from them, only 22 were delivered. We've also got five 15E locos that are from Mitsui. 29 of the 19Es also from Mitsui, longstanding. In the case of CRRC, so you see why they come to the top of mind on our side, there are a lot more of their locos that are longstanding, but some of them are actually from the earlier procurement period. 43 of the 20Es, 28 of the 21Es, and 90 of the 22Es, and the 22Es would be part of the 1064 procurement, and of the 23Es, that's Alstom, 10 are still outstanding. So that just gives you a sense of how many of these locos. Now, in our fleet today, we've got 1,971 locomotives, and that includes the 315, which are longstanding. So the operating fleet actually that we have available is about 1,600 effectively that we can use given until we bring back the 315. What is regarded as new generation, these are the locals which are basically 12 years and younger. We've got about 1,884. In the period where we were able to move 226 million tons, and you'll see that in subsequent slides, we had about 2,215 locomotives. So the traction power matters. So as things currently stand, we have about 10,000 kilonewtons less of tractive power, which we would require to be able to move the volumes on the system. And that's why the 2.9 billion rand was really important for us. Next slide, please. So the next 2.9 billion that we requested from Treasury, as you know, with the floods in Durban, we suffered significant, suffered significant damage, with the worst damage being from just outside of Pietermaritzburg on the railway line right through to the port. So we had damage suffered by rail. Virtually all of our facilities, in fact, all of our facilities at the port itself were flooded. There was also damage in PNPA in the dry docks, where we also had some significant flooding and damage to the equipment. So the total losses that we have estimated as Transnet as a result of the floods are 7 billion rand. The revenue loss is about 1.5 billion, and that we will never be able to claim because it's not covered by insurance either. Asset repair and replacement cost about 5.5 billion rand, and then there was actually additional cleanup, just the cleanup and restoration of 72 million rand. We are insured at 2.3 billion. However, we have to take the first loss of 500 million, and so the claim we have put in with the insurance is 1.8 billion, which is currently in assessment. We've made quite good progress, actually, in the assessment and working with the insurance companies, as well as internal audit on our side to do technical audit and AGSA, to be quite comfortable that the claim that we've put in, we should get quite close to the 1.8 billion that's due to us. Obviously, if you know, with insurers, you never quite get what you wanted. So over and above the insurance claim and the 2.9, this basically enables us to refund the programs that we would have taken this money from, because we made a decision as Transnet and the board that the container corridor is really important and it's essential that we fix it. But also, as the honorable members may be aware, we had started the process in the beginning of the year to sell slots. And as a result of the damage of this infrastructure, we had to put a pause on that process until such time that we were able to bring back the system. We anticipate that by the beginning of the next year, early April, we should actually be close on the full capacity slots that we had available, even prior, clearly almost at design, because when the floods happened, we had about 25 to 27 slots available on that route. We should be back to close on 40 slots available on the roof, which is actually quite exciting for us and also in terms of the process for third party access. Next slide, please. So the other dimensionalities, Chair, that you had asked for was what was historical performance. So we decided to go back to 2015-16. Remember, I referred to the year where we moved 226 million tons. At the time, we had the 2,215 or some, let me just go and check so that I'm accurate in the numbers. We had 2,215 locals in 17-18, and we were able to move 226 locals. We were able to move 226 million tons. As of today, and this indicates the performance, as we've had a serious reduction of tractive power, as I've already indicated to you, Chair. Most of the worst effect, and that's why we keep on talking about the North Corridor, occurs on the black, which is the export coal line, and that's where we use most of the Chinese locals, the 22 East. Now, because of the escarpment in South Africa, where you move from very high up in Mpumalanga and you have to basically drop down to the coast in Richards Bay, your needs in terms of braking systems as well are quite unique. And so you can't just use any local that we have in the system to locate on that system. That system has its own braking system, which is essential for any local that we... So it's not like we can be able to move a local from somewhere else and go and dump it on that system and we should be fine. So you'll see coal has really suffered significantly. We're also seeing losses on the export iron ore side. GFB is on the container corridor in part, but also the cable theft on that system is a serious problem that we have to do. On the worst cable theft occurs on the container corridor as well as in the central, what we call the central ring. The bottom slide, Chair, just shows the performance of petroleum. It drops steeply in 2020-21 as a result of COVID, where there was hardly any movement, but that has started to improve in recent months. And as you can see, it's 15 million, and we anticipate to end in a much stronger footing on that side. Next slide, please. This slide then talks, Chair, to the financial performance of Transnet over time. The top slide, the top line graph indicates total borrowings by Transnet. These have stabilized somewhat, but we really need to actively work on reducing the borrowings by Transnet. You also look at our revenue, which is the green line. It remains stable, but you know, quite variable in some ways, and that needs to grow substantially. Now, there are a couple of issues that we're dealing with on that side. One is looking at rebasing our tariffs. We have not actually, since in a very long time, actually gone through a systematic process of breaking down all of the individual cost drivers. Now, as a result, in part of the National White Paper on rail, we are now going through a process where we're separating, where we've separated actually the accounts of the infrastructure from the operations. And that will enable us for the first time to get to full cost recovery. And I think this lines up with the work that ESCOM is undertaking. And this is not to just drive revenue by increasing tariffs, but most importantly, if we were able to generate the revenue that we're supposed to achieve, we would be in a much stronger position to be able to, first of all, deal with our own debt and reduce that, but also undertake a lot more of the funding that is required for Transnet. Another area that is that we're looking at, which is long overdue, rail economics has, to my mind, it's actually antiquated thinking in some ways. In rail economics, you charge tariffs on the basis of the weight of the commodity that you move. But as you know, high value manufactured commodities are not easy. So agriculture, autos, and manufacturing the containers, they're low weight. And so because they're low weight in a system which is biased towards charging on weight, we've always under-recovered. It's one area, the container corridor, at least if we've looked at the figures in the last up to 10 years, we've been making losses. And the more recent period, we make losses close on 3 billion rand annually on running the container corridor, because we've just never been able to achieve the revenue that we required. So for example, it costs us about 2 rand 18 to look after and run that system, and yet the fees that we get is only 1 rand on average. So it's obvious that we will be taking a hiding on that corridor. EBITDA has come down in 2020-21, but as you can see, it's much lower than in the previous period, and we're working hard to improve this. We will continue to target EBITDA as Transnet because we're an asset-heavy business. I think from an economic growth perspective, and I think, Honourable Chair, you would also agree on that, the black line is probably the most troubling one, because that's showing a decline or just too much of a steady state on capital investment. And we need to up the capital investment if we're going to be able to have a direct impact on economic growth and job creation. The last slide at the bottom basically shows what is CapEx, and CapEx would make up partly maintenance, both short-term and long-term. And the purple line labeled as other is actually the expansion investment. That also is low, and that's an area that we really need to focus on. And the argument here is not just expansion of the rail network. Remember, we've got ports, and this line should start to change going forward as the investments that we're working on, both at the ports and in TPT and even TTL, should start to feed through to the system. Next slide, please. So given all of this, what have we been doing as Transnet? We've created a strategy which is basically for growth and renewal. And it's really important that honorable members understand that it's both growth on the one hand. It may look like it cuts down, but the objective is to grow going forward. We've looked at the situation where we've got weak financials on the one side, which we are having to address. We've had operational issues, and that relates to some of the operating restructuring that we're doing. And then also, we have to respond to the shifting policy environment, and especially with regards to rail policy. We must be honest that the idea of having infrastructure regulated is long overdue, and we support it wholeheartedly because it should deliver a rail infrastructure system which is fully funded and properly funded. So in the short term, and that's really on the 12-month basis, we continue to look at this, but please, if honourable members would understand that both the short term and future state actions, we are almost running them simultaneously, where we're looking at both improved cash generation, and revenue is a real big issue that we're focusing on, enhanced operational performance. We're pretty much through with procurement reform in terms of policies. Now it's about embedding it and seeing whether it generates the outcomes that we wanted to see. And the outcomes are at two levels, both in terms of improved quality and pricing for Transnet as a buyer, but on the other hand, is greater stability of demand for our customers so that they can be able to invest and innovate and actually create the jobs. In terms of focus areas strategically, as we've indicated, debt management and cash management is really crucial on our side. The procurement execution is actually quite important as well, as we've indicated. On the future focus stuff, looking at long-term financial sustainability of Transnet, and that will tie up with the slide right towards the end, where we talk about how we see an evolution in financing of Transnet. There are issues around institutional reform, both within and in any case, the opportunity or the partnerships that we are bringing in some of our operations mean that we also need to start seriously looking at how we are structured Transnet ourselves. And then the volume uplift, both directly by ourselves, but also by third parties who are coming into Transnet. And then we continue to work on building and rebuild, building on a high performance culture and increasing an open and transparent organization. If you can go to the next slide, please. Hello, next slide. We would then, I mean, on the back of, and these, as I've already indicated, please, the budget forecast is related to a previous corporate plan. The new corporate plan, given the period, has still not been approved by the board. And also, as indicated, these are not figures that we would normally make available. What we do report on is the performance of the company, and like any company, we would not, no company ever makes this forecast available in public. But this indicates significant risk, because part of what had been our anticipation is that with by now, in fact, we had anticipated that as November started, we would have resolved all of our issues with CRRC, and we'd have locals in the system. But this just indicates what we anticipate as a forecast. That the on the container volumes, that's both for TNPA and transit port terminals. And one of the innovations that we need to start looking at, and this is over the next couple of years, Chair, we should start seeing this. We will start indicating, because this measures the containers. It doesn't always measure exactly the weight, whether it's an empty container or not. That's an area that we need to focus on. The next slide on autos, we just take the numbers from the OEMs and we look at what, and on that one, we've really performed quite well. And then the last slide was talking to what we anticipate to be growth on the fuel side. And on the fuel side, we've recently reached an agreement with SAF on the use of Towton, which is an inland terminal for fuel, as a bonded storage facility for use by the OEMs, by the fuel majors. Unfortunately, they have an outstanding case with SAF, which they need to resolve on. And as soon as they resolve, they should be able to use our facilities. And that should see quite a significant growth on the pipeline side, because then the pipeline and rail will be back playing a significant role in delivering fuel into Botswana, for example. This is just some a forecast, and as I've indicated, on historical figures on where we anticipate revenue to go. But as indicated, this issue of the locals remains quite a serious risk that we have to face. If you can go to the next slide, please. Chair, this looks at our borrowing plan, both starting off at the 128 billion or so that we currently owe. And what we were looking at is how do we aggressively address this over the next couple of years, because in 5 years' time, we'd like to be closer to the 40% in terms of our gearing, because that would then give us headroom both to take advantage of growth opportunities on the one hand, but also to have a robust balance sheet that is able to withstand any shock to the system. The partnering that we are driving and third-party access is quite crucial for us to bring in additional revenue. And also the 2.9 that we would have received from government would support the return to service of long-standing locals, and also the refunding of 2.9 billion for the with regards to its contribution towards the KZ floods is crucial for us and is included in the 2022-23 numbers that we've added. Next slide, please. So we thought we, towards the end, Chair, just come back and help the committee to focus on what we regard as critical, remaining critical constraints that we have. And these are binding. The locals can't repeat it enough, is that we need to get back those 315 locals, which are longstanding. Now, the advantage of having over 1,100 of our locals being newer generation, it means that per local, we've got higher tractive power. So in truth, to achieve a higher volume movement, we don't need to get back to that 2,000 numbers of locals that we had previously. On the infrastructure side, there has been systematic underinvestment over the years, as I've already indicated, just on the container corridor. And the container corridor is unique because it's one of the systems where we have two two lines dedicated right from the source, which is in Gauteng, right through to Durban. So it's a really expensive line to maintain. There has been significant underinvestment, and over and above that is that its losses has meant that money that would have been used to invest in infrastructure on the other corridors has basically cross-subsidized the continued operations on that system. And that's one of the things that we're trying to stop, is to make sure that each corridor is able to fundamentally fund all of its costs directly. This area of agriculture, manufacturing, which is in containers, and as well as autos, we believe is a crucial area that requires government support. And then on the security side, the incidents of theft, as you would know, are at a level where it is not, it's beyond Transnet, and in fact beyond PRASA to be able to deal with this issue. Eskom has exactly the same problems. In the last financial year, we lost 1,500 kilometers of copper, which copper cable, which we have to replace. It's not funded by the customers. There's no insurance that covers that. So that also adds to the cost, but not over and above the actual cost of replacing the copper cable is the issue that in those moments, the trains are not able to move, so we lose revenue. And unfortunately, in single lines, once the train is not moving, it's revenue that you can't make up for, because it's only 24 hours at the end of the day. So a really important intervention. But we must say that government support in enabling us to hire peace officers of Transnet, which means that we can now effect arrests and undertake investigations, is absolutely crucial and is really a massive fill-up towards us. And we are working on both the training, identifying the resources that we require for that. Now, in terms of the initiative to improve the availability and reliability of locals, we've basically got five. There is the as I've already indicated, returning non-operating locals. We'll be working with the OEMs themselves to support us in bringing this back. At the time, about a year ago, we started talking to the IDC to see if they could help us with the funding so that we could accelerate the delivery. We're quite far with that additional funding that we required to, and because what we decided to do also was to approach industry to see if they could help us. Normally, this is maintenance that would have been done by Transnet Engineering, but we've opened that up to outsiders. The maintenance support and spares contract is really important because we then add an obligation on the OEMs for reliability so that we are able to have access to the fleet. The new local supply is almost an invariable as a result of the 1064 procurement exercise, where in the case of CRRC, which was originally the CSR locals, 99 had not been delivered. So we're just basically closing on that delivery. And in the case of Elstom, 156 had not been delivered. And we anticipate this over the next 48 months, as soon as we get to an signed agreement with them. And then about what we're also trying to working on is improving our maintenance tracking, and to ensure that there's discipline in maintenance, that we don't do what we've historically done, is run to failure any of our equipment, but rather maintain as we go along. In fact, we are in the process of approving a new maintenance policy in Transnet, which goes right across the group, from the rail, right through from TFR, right through to the ports. Both at TNPA and TPT, so that we can improve reliability. Incidentally, even TPT is going through a process of signing, of tendering for MRSA, a maintenance support agreement with all of their OEMs who supply them with port equipment like Kalma, Liba, so that the cranes will have greater reliability. And most importantly, we have long lead times items in South Africa. In fact, one of the challenges that we have right across, I mean, if we, even when you look at WebTech, who we have a normal relationship with by and large, the challenge is that there are some of the parts that we require, which are long lead time items, that if we had had a maintenance and service agreement, we wouldn't be in the bottom of the line. We would have been able to have secured them. And that's why the maintenance agreements are really important for us. Next slide. So this is just an indication of the timing that we frankly were hoping for in terms of returning to service of the long standing locals. In the December to March period, 143 locals were to be returned to service, frankly, until such time that we've closed on the agreement with the and from April 23 to March 2024, we were looking another 181 of the locals to be brought back, because some of the damage or some of the work that needs to be done is quite extensive to bring back the locals. And that would lead to about 2.7 billion, which is what we've estimated as the cost. Next slide, please. This is just a reflection of the proposed delivery schedule that we've negotiated both with Elstone as well as CRRC over the next couple of years, with the fastest delivery we're hoping to come out of the Chinese CRRC, because as I've indicated, that's where we require quite a lot of locals for the coal line. And then BT, we've also negotiated a delivery schedule with them. They are kicking in from early next year, right through until 2026, March 2026. Next slide. So we've done an estimation. Now this was so on the assumption that all that the non-operating locals would start coming back into the system beginning in November 2022. However, unfortunately, we've not been able to achieve this. We had anticipations that we should bring, be able to move an additional 10 million tons, which would have generated about 2 billion in revenue for both for TFR. We had not done the calculations with its additional revenue also for TPT as well as Transnet engineering itself, most of it on general freight as well as achieving the 60 million ton at least on the RBCT coal exports. For the country, we anticipated additional foreign revenues just on the basis back of what are the prevailing prices. In November, we are not going to be able to deliver that, and not sure if we're going to be able to reach agreement in December. And South Africa's December is also a bit of a problem as well. The numbers at the bottom indicate on a sustained basis. The MSAs are really important because they ensure that the sustainability in the availability of locals going forward. The trucks that we'd be able to move off the roads, that unfortunately we are able to deliver once we have the locals on. Next slide. The additional locals, if we had them, would really fill quite a huge gap, as indicated. If you look at chrome and ferrochrome, we've got 35 trains. The demand is 35 trains, but we only have 20 locals. That also would move quite fast if we were able to have additional train. At the bottom, we indicate locals. At the bottom, we indicate what it translates to in terms of the number of trains that we have available, tonnages, and also the revenue impact by commodity type or the various flows that we have. You even see Sasol. Can you go to the next slide? We would actually make a positive contribution also to Eskom. Currently, their demand is for 42 trains to Majuba, but we can only run 21 at this stage. This is an additional 60 trains that's and 480,000 additional tons of coal that we would be able to supply to Eskom. Same situation with AMSA and same situation with the timber companies, timber as well, where we would be able to add quite significantly in terms of the number of trains. That's if we had the additional roads locals brought back into the system. We've not included the improvement in the service in the locals that we'd be able to run onto the continent. Next slide. So getting to the slide, I mean, on this one, where this is really, Chair, sorry, towards genuine conclusion. It talks to going forward, the conversation that we think is crucial to have is around how we fund infrastructure. This is from the Rail White Paper, and we started to look at models in different countries on how government is funding infrastructure going forward. If you look at it, between 2020 to 2029, the German government, federal government, is giving Deutsche Bahn, who Deutsche Bahn is a lot like us, which is they are the infrastructure owner. It's a state-owned company. They are the infrastructure owner, and they control about 60% of the operations. 30% or so is in private hands on their side. Deutsche Bahn has received between 2020 to 2029, receiving 63.4 billion euros from the government to be able to support the capital expansion requirements, a significant chunk of infrastructure maintenance as well is funded directly from this money that comes from government. With Deutsche Bahn being expected to cover about 30% of capital requirements. Now, we're clear about the fact that we're not Germany as a country. We can't afford that. But what we're saying is we need to move increasingly in that direction. Just as a reference point, Honorable Chair, the road, Edo Kirkwood Road, is going to cost government 336 million rand to upgrade. Yet, if you upgraded the rail, it would only cost 18 million rand. Now, you'd upgrade the infra, then the next question would be how we then price for access to the service. One of the policy interventions is that we start dividing the South African rail network tiering between A, B, and C, and the standard of maintenance for branch lines which carry low volumes, low weight commodities would obviously be much lower than the a network where we carry very heavy cargo, where the maintenance standards are much higher and therefore much more expensive. But what the point is that there's an opportunity to increase investment in branch lines, which might be able to serve the community and at least move heavy cargo onto rail at a much lower cost to the system, to government. Next slide. So as Transnet, what we've been doing is the debt that we indicated to you and the borrowings that we continue to undertake for self-funding, and that's the funding that we put on balance sheet. The corporate plan for 2022-23 had indicated about 98 billion would come from us directly using our balance sheet. However, there's also alternative funding that we look at, and that's where we are using the partnership to drive the increased investment in the other areas where we think partnerships are much more useful operationally. They bring in, we've got opportunities and a viable opportunity where private sector would be interested in participating. Towards the end, where we talk about the economic obligations, this is the area where branch lines would come in, where some additional government support, both at a local government, provincial government, and even national government, would actually be helpful to increase the volume of cargo, rail-friendly cargo that we can move on rail, which at a reasonable price, and especially within regional areas, and especially given the fact that we've got this huge, extensive network as South Africa. Next slide, please. So in conclusion, Chair, we as Transnet understand the critical role that we play, both with regards to economic growth and competitiveness, and actually are ready to play that role. But as we've already indicated to you, Chair, is that The three binding constraints that we have to deal with is the availability of locals, the issue of infrastructure funding for maintenance, basically, not even necessarily expansion. There are moments where we've got to look for expansion, but some, especially in the system, heavy ore line system, we can work with clients. However, in the area of manufacturers, and I think a project that gets referenced a lot in the press is the expansion to Gqeberha to move forward volumes. Unfortunately, as I've already indicated, Chair, in manufacturing, autos and agriculture, because of the weight of the commodities, the economics don't work. So there's always an under-recovery. And it is crucial that for the expansion of that capacity to Gqeberha, we actually achieve support from government so that we can enable Ford's expanded investment both in Gauteng as well as in the Eastern Cape. And lastly, with regards to security incidents, in the last half of the year, in this first half of the year, we have had over 500 kilometers of copper cable stolen. Last year, we had 760. So there is an improvement as a result of partnerships with customers and the interventions that we have been making. But to be honest, Chair, at 500 kilometers, it's still excessive. So also in that context, we have over the last couple of years, I think we've got only debt, which is guaranteed at 3 billion rand or 3.5 billion rand from Treasury. And that comes out, I think it's from the late 90s. But in the last 15 years, absolutely no support whatsoever has been given to Transnet. All of the funding that we have as Transnet has been based on the balance sheet. No guarantees, no cash from government. We, however, look forward to ongoing engagements with government on how infrastructure and maintenance is funded going forward to enable a shift from road to rail. We're using private sector partnerships aggressively to the extent that they help us increase capacity and grow Transnet going forward without increasing the debt burden on the balance sheet, because we're quite determined to increase the robustness of the Transnet balance sheet. Thank you very much, honourable members, and thank you very much, Chair. We are available to take any questions that you might have.
Thank you, Group CEO. Let me just check, is the Oral Minister on the platform? Mr. Gurahan?
Good morning, Chair. Yes, I am. My apologies. I was both having technical issues, but I was also engaging with the Leader of the Opposition, who insisted on making a grandstanding visit to Kusile without making proper arrangements. So my apologies for connecting late.
No problem, Minister. We decided to proceed with a Group CEO. Just to check with you, do you want to come in now, or would you allow you would have come in first, or you want to allow the oral members to have questions?
No, please go ahead, Chair. Let me not hold you up. And then if there's a need for me to respond, I'll come through.
Perfect.
Thank oral you. Members,
thank you very much. Transnet, oral members, you know how we do it. Can I have indications of the oral members who would like to interact with the presentation?
Matafa.
Honorable Matafa.
Chair Sarupen, please.
Honorable Sarupen. Good morning, Honorable Sarupen.
Good morning, Chair.
Waiting, other members. Honourable members.
Peters.
Honourable Peters. Okay. if that other hands would allow you to come in, but Oral Matafa can start.
Thank you very much, Chair. I'm going to request that I switch my video off. My network has been rather unstable, if you allow me, Chair.
Please proceed, Oral Matafa.
Thank you very much, Chair. Good morning, Chairperson, Honorable Minister, members of the committee. the CON team. Thank you for the presentation that was presented. It is really assisting in our oversight work and clarifies many areas of concerns that we would have had based obviously on some headlines. One, I will request a comment from, I beg your pardon, from the team just to clear the air so that we are able to move forward. Chair, I just have a few questions. The first one emanates from slide 4, where the 2.9 billion is stated to be required to ensure the return of out-of-service locomotives. My question is that I've had a few figures, and I'll request humbly that the CEO maybe just confirm or correct me. The idea is to procure 315 locomotives, and the view is that there is no need to move back to the 1,971 total number. Now, my question is, if I'm correct with my understanding, how will this decline in numbers of locomotives to be procured or repaired will impact on the full operations of Transnet, particularly in the space of passenger movement? The second one is, what is the ideal stock target if money was not a problem for Transnet as it pertains to locomotives? Coupled to that, Chair, currently there's a hot topic on BEE, what it represents and what other sectors of society prefer it to represent. My question thus is that in the 2.9 billion, is there a clear plan or policy that will allow previously disadvantaged individuals, particularly companies owned by Africans, to be able to participate or benefit from this allocation that is being done? So I just want a view on the issue of BEE and how will Transnet respond to that? Because in the main, it's starting to appear as if, well, that is not according to Transnet, I'm just saying, appear as if being black and doing business with the state is criminal. So I just wanted you to find out how are they going to approach that particular issue. Chair, slide six, there's a view that there is capital disinvestment decline since 2015 and 2016. Now, the question here is, what is the main reason behind the decline in capital investment? For us, we view the situation with serious concern. And the question is the situation ideal or are there plans to have the situation reversed? I have noted that the CEO does mention that they are in interaction with the IDC. Could this interaction be one of the efforts to try and close this gap? And if not, what other solution is there, if any? Chair, on the issue of loss through criminal action of Transnet infrastructure, I'm just interested to find out if whether have hotspot of this theft been identified? Have other measures like anti-theft copper or even security patrolling the main lines considered to ensure at least that there is an effort to prevent theft before it happens? And if it does happen with the anti-theft copper cable, you are at least able to trace and maybe recover if you are successful in the tracing exercise. So I just wanted to find out what efforts are there to try and curb this particular occurrence from becoming worse. Chair, I mentioned the headlines. One headline states the following, and here I just need a reply from the CEO just to clear the air so that at least South Africans are on board as well. The headline reads as follows. Experts estimate that Transnet is losing about 3 billion rands in revenue a year due to unproductive ports. Can we have a response to this headline? Maybe an indication of if there are unproductive ports, how many are they and what efforts are we actually putting in place to ensure that the situation is improved? Chair, the last one, unless if I've missed it, but for me, the presentation seems to be silent on facts around profit or losses at Transnet. Perhaps the department may want to cover this area so that we have a full picture of the state of finances. If whether are we making a profit, are we running at a loss, are we in trouble financially, or are we stable? But I appreciate the presentation and all the efforts that are being taken to ensure that there is turnaround in Transnet. We really appreciate it. Chairperson, that is for me for now. Thank you very much. I appreciate the effort and the opportunity to participate. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Honorable Matafa. Honorable Sarupen, please come in.
Yes, thank you, Chairperson. I think let me pick up on one of the points that Honorable Matafa raised, and that is on the capital investments and the general decline over the years, although I see that in terms of CapEx, it's been fairly stable. What is the plan to raise capital investment at Transnet over time, over the next 4 or 5 years, or even the medium term, 3 years? How do they foresee that unfolding, and what kind of investments are they looking at when they speak about capital investments? And then I think critically, the most important question is, if this amount of $2.9 billion were to be approved, does Transnet foresee that it will need any further bailouts in future, or is it on a path to being sustainable? How does Transnet see its financial situation over the next 2 to 3 years? And does it anticipate that it will be able to manage what it is doing? I see on one of the slides with total borrowings and gearing that borrowings are intended to decline over time as well, and stabilized, certainly decline from the current financial year to 2024 quite substantially, and then stabilize after that. Does Transnet foresee that that is actually going to be the case, or does it anticipate that it will have will borrowings have to actually continue at a slightly higher level? I'd like to get a sense of that. Then just with regards to its operations, I see things like locomotives and those sorts of things. Is Transnet engaging in full cost recovery for the services that it provides, particularly to other state-owned enterprises like Eskom, but even to the private sector like AMSA and others? Is it actually turning generating enough revenue, don't want to say turning a profit, but generating enough revenue to be able to be self-sustaining in these operations? And if not, what is the plan to turn that around? That's everything from me, Chair. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Honorable Sarupen. Honorable Peters.
Good morning, Chairperson. Good morning, Chair, and
morning,
the Minister and the DG and the team from Transnet. Thank you very much for a very informative presentation. Chairperson, mine would be very simple questions, taking into consideration the issues raised by Honorable Matafa and Honorable Sarupen. I would not veer into the financial related matters. Mine is mainly with regard to the last point of the DG's presentation about the implications of the rail policy, but also I'm happy to hear that Transnet does or DPE does support the with the example that they use about Germany and access to the how much Germany spends on the infrastructure. That case study is very interesting to know whether there is participation by DPE and Transnet with the discussions of the rail policy, and the issue related to the transport regulator. That takes me to the question about a private sector or a participation or private participation. In taking in my first question into consideration, what would be the DPE and Transnet's allocation to the issue of private sector access? But also, as at present, Chairperson, what is the percentage access for Black-owned companies, as well as the access for women owned companies? I'm talking about in the mining sector, because they also need access to move their ore, and even in the other sectors, they need to move their produce. The other thing, Chairperson, what is the investment that Transnet and DPE is doing in skills development, especially with the indicators of the DG with regards to their support for the move from road to rail, which is a very interesting and a very good development in the issues related to road safety, but also the challenges that we have with the trucking industry. What investment do you put into skills development looking forward at the possible move from road to rail? Because the South Africans would need, unlike with the challenges of the World Cup in 2010, we would need skills from South Africans to be able to work in those developments that you would be working on to increase the capacity at Transnet. The last one, Chair, is taking into consideration the issues of road safety, the issues of challenges with the move with regard to the taxi industry. Is there any possible engagement between PRASA and Transnet with regard to the metro rail, not metro rail, to Shosholoza Main, because of the long distance travel that our people always have. But also between, because when we asked PRASA, Chairperson, PRASA said they don't own these derelict stations on the network. And because those derelict stations becomes the haven for criminality, what is Transnet planning for that? But also the properties that Transnet have all over the country, is it not possible that Transnet can either lease at nominal fee to the provincial government or local government those properties? I'll make an example, Chairperson, that during my tenure as Premier of the Northern Cape, we engaged with Transnet with regard to the building, the Sawa building in Kimberley. And I'm happy to indicate that the Premier's office is still operating from that building, and it is well kept. So I would want to know whether there is that type of initiative on the side of Transnet to make sure that you safeguard your properties, but also safeguard some of these old stations where the small businesses can operate from. So I'm asking these questions, Chairperson, and I think it will be the only questions that I have. Thank you.
Thank you, Honorable Peters. Can I check with the oral members, any other member who would like to say something?
Yes, Chairperson. I did raise, Sheikh Imam, please.
Honorable Sheikh Imam, please come in.
Thank you, Chairperson. Yeah, just my, some of my concerns because of the poor services that is provided by our ports, many shipping companies are diverting to our neighboring countries, which simply means that our ports are at some stage are going to become white elephant shippers. What is this department doing to try and prevent that? The second thing is that if you remember in 2021, we had a cyber attack, which also affected services at the ports. How are you trying to prevent or avert that in the future? The third thing is, are you able to tell us what was the estimated loss to the economy as a result of the strike that we just had recently? And how are you going to be able to prevent that in the future? And the other thing is, as far as I know, you know, my memory serves me correctly, Chairperson, that at some stage we were building a factory in Danota, I think, if that's the term, but just correct me if I'm wrong. Could you perhaps tell us if that is functioning? What is the latest development with that? And the other thing is that the last thing I will touch on is, why is it that we are so reliant on the outside world, particularly for stuff like even train wheels and that kind of stuff, even though at some stage we had the capacity to manufacture these things, and we opted to shut down this factory, sell those stuff, machinery piecemeal, whereas, you know, it could have been, and it also affected a lot of jobs in this country. Why did we not try and save that so that we could employ more people, produce our own necessary stuff that we needed, and also use it for the purposes of export? Now, some experts lastly are saying, particularly in the transport sector, that Transnet does not have what it takes to effectively deal with the crisis that we have in the country, particularly from the port perspective. Can you tell us what is your comment in terms of that? Thank you, Chairperson.
Thank you, Honorable Sheikh Imam. Do I have any other honorable member would like to come in? Okay. Let me then come in and let me thank
Chairperson.
Yes, Honorable Lenzana.
I'm Lenzana here. You know, pardon me, Chairperson. I had told myself that I would be a careful listener today. But look, I am thinking that at least I have to ask this question particularly to the minister. If he's still around. You know, there is this question of confidentiality that we have to keep up with. Now, I'm not sure, Chair, if at some stage we would be able as the committee to be favored with details of all these court-related cases wherein if then there is this element of confidentiality, but we would be told that there is this list of individuals who have been charged for corruption-related issues, and that they are now at this stage with investigations, and if then court has ensued, it is at this level. And if there are cases which are done, these are the cases which have been done, and if there has an action taken against such individuals, what has happened? I'm thinking aloud, Chairperson. Pardon me for this late thought. Thanks.
Lenzana, any other honorable member?
Sorry, Chairperson. I've got one urgent question. It might not be relevant to Transnet, but yes, to public enterprises. You think I can raise that, Chairperson?
Yeah, please, the Minister here.
Yeah, thank you, and thank you, Minister, for being here. Minister, I've been raising this for the last 2 weeks, and I'm very concerned, and this is to do particularly with Eskom. And, you know, we might be, there is talk that we might have fuel shedding in the country. Now, aggravating the situation of Eskom, because they need diesel. And now we've been told they do not have the financial resources to provide diesel. And we are concerned that this is going to have a major impact on the energy crisis we already have in the country. Maybe if you can just advise us whether there is some plan in place to prevent this from happening so that we don't have further interruptions in the energy supply. We can't afford anything more than we already have. But thank you for that.
Okay. Thank you, Honorable Sheikh. Minister, I hope you'll be able to answer that one, although we're about Transnet. The oral member just requested to pose that question. He knew very well it's not about today's presentation. But let me come in if there's nobody else who wants to come in. Okay. Thank Group CEO for the presentation and the clarification as to why you need money from government. Just to say, as this committee, as you can see, I think it's the first time we were having Transnet in front of us. We usually don't bother you if you don't request money from government, but immediately you request money from government, you become our client. So you have defined yourself as our client, as it were. And also thank the minister for coming to this meeting. We got the apology. My first question, Group CEO, what would you say when I'm saying you are underinsured and it took the floods to expose you? That's one. Two, you have made a point here that you charge according to weight, and then it undermines your true charging as far as high value commodities, freight, are involved. My question, what is that stops you from charging the correct way so that there is no cross-subsidization to speak of? The events at Transnet, unavailability of coaches and so on and so forth, what has been the impact of this on your cost of capital? The next question, when you talk about the question of government having to invest in the rail infrastructure, are you then propagating for a separate company which is going to own infrastructure? That's one. But related to the question, obviously, for you to access that infrastructure, you'll have to pay. On a cost-benefit analysis, where is that going to take you? If you drive to many of our roads, but I usually use N3, Johannesburg to Durban, and it's just a nightmare to drive on the road because of trucks. On this day, I called one of the truck drivers. I said, guys, there's too much of you on the road. obviously, the impact of this is quite negative on a number of fronts, damaging the roads. You know how the trucks are. But again, you've heard about the accidents. You'd know in Pietermaritzburg, down the Porsche from Hilton, down there are accidents, trucks day in and day out. And they all say it's because of the suboptimal operations of Transnet. Would you agree with that comment? Honorable Minister, this is for you. Obviously, you know that whenever we consider recapitalization of companies by government, we always look at the conditions. Are there conditions that you are attaching to this recapitalization that you are proposing to Parliament? And if there are, what conditions are you looking at? The last one, I'm taking advantage of the Group CEO here, because this is under your portfolio. What's happening with your blue train?
I think with those questions, I'll back to you, Honourable Minister and the Group CEO. You'll decide who answers which question. Thank you.
Let me come in first, Chairperson. And I'm also in a cabinet committee meeting shortly, so I might excuse myself after responding. I think, Honourable Matafa's questions around BEE and the beneficiaries as far as small business are concerned or black business is concerned, there's lots of stats available from Transnet. So if you take a combination of Transnet and Eskom, I think the expenditure there covers more than 100 billion rands. So I don't think there's anything negative about that. I think that what we require is what I was reading somewhere yesterday, an explosion of black-owned businesses that have the technical ability to supply commodities that are required by our SOEs and the state more generally. At the same time, I think the committee and Parliament more generally should take a strong stand against criminals, I don't care if they're black, white, pink or blue, who are looting the state under false pretenses, supplying, for example, rocks to Majuba Power Station instead of coal, supplying fake parts to Eskom for which they get paid a premium, and so on. So I think we've got to get this explosion of the number of businesses going in South Africa, because that's what is going to increase economic inclusion, but more importantly, level the playing fields after the historical exclusion that we've actually had. I'm sure the CEO will respond to the capital investment points that the Honourable Tharupen and Matafa are making. But that period of 2015-16 and around that time, the clear impression that we have from the Zondo inquiry amongst commission inquiry and so on, is that capital was shifted in the direction of these locomotive deals. And you had a fair amount of details provided to you today. And that meant that maintenance and new investments took a backseat as far as infrastructure and equipment was concerned as well. So state capture did have that kind of impact as far as that is concerned. And clearly, if we're looking at the Durban port alone, the numbers I think Transnet had a little while ago was almost 100 billion rands over 10 years to be invested in building a new terminal, hopefully with a private sector partner, would bring in some of that capital and skills as well. The word bailout has been used, and here you use the word capitalization, but I think neither of the 2.9 billion rand amount to either a bailout or a capital or a recapitalization of Transnet. As we explained, in the one instance, it's about recovering from the floods, which were quite devastating as far as port and rail infrastructure is concerned in the greater Etegweni area. And in the second instance, it's a derivative of money owed as a result of the locomotive transaction, which the CEO would have got into. As far as Sheikh Imam is concerned, I missed Honourable Peters' contribution, unfortunately.
Hey, somebody, I'm not connecting. Why am I not connecting?
Okay, Ms. Name, please mute your gadget. Thank you. Sorry, Minister, continue.
Yeah. Does Transnet have the ability? It's going to be a tough haul, and we've always said very transparently from a public enterprise's point of view that recovery from corruption and the decimation of big institutions that are like Eskom, Transnet, PRASA, and so on, including the revenue services, takes time. The damage is not just one at a board level or a management level. The damage is in terms of culture, in terms of operations, in terms of revenue, and in terms of the kind of or lack of investment that is supposed to have occurred. I'll come back to the diesel point in a moment that the Honourable Sheikh Imam has raised. On Honourable Lenzana's question of confidentiality, I'm not sure what he's referring to, but to the extent it's possible, I think Transnet will be quite easily able to provide details of what actions have been taken against whom, either within the Transnet rules or through the law enforcement machinery of the state itself. So there's no confidentiality there. I mean, that's in the public domain. Unless some deal has been made which requires non-disclosure by any particular individual or entity. But we have reported elsewhere in Parliament on some of those issues previously, and you're certainly welcome to that information. So if the committee chairperson, committee secretary can contact us with the right request, we'll certainly make that available to you. Then on your questions, Honourable Chairperson, most of them are operational and I think the important questions that you've raised. And let me just say that the ideal would be that the trucks that we see on the N3 or N1 should be far less than the numbers that we see at the moment, and that Transnet's ability to get an effective rail logistics system going, which enables that to happen, is a crucial part of the business objectives that we've set for them. And the quicker that happens, the better. As far as maintenance of roads is concerned, but also accidents, blockage of traffic, and the manner in which sometimes these trucks behave on the roads. So I share your experience in that particular regard as well, as far as the N3 is concerned. So it's an area that needs a lot more attention. And whether we like it or not, there are issues, operational issues within Transnet that the CEO and her team are giving attention to. And I'm sure that we'll see the results of that as we go forward. So as far as conditionalities is concerned, in the first instance, let me repeat that this is not really a request for recapitalization as much as, if you like, a reimbursement of some sort. But the conditionalities has to be for all of these entities. Are you spending the money well? Are you investing it in the right place? Are you ensuring that you're getting value for money in whatever procurement exercise is engaged in? And can we say that the culture of corruption has been eliminated? And the answer is not yet. There are still people in each of these systems, including the state, more broadly, who engage in one or other kind of malfeasance as well. So there's still work to do in that particular regard as we go forward. My last point, Chair, is in relation to Sheikh Imam and diesel availability to Eskom. Eskom has utilized a lot of its allocated cash, in allocated meaning the cash that NERSA would allow to be recouped in one way or another. And we did issue a statement on Sunday which said that we will find the cash, and we are still in the processes of engagement around that issue. And we'll hopefully within the next few days, and I was hoping it would be much sooner, we've got to get this process going. But we will issue a statement later today, which indicates what the status is and what the availability of diesel is currently as far as the open cycle gas turbines are concerned. And as you know, at the maximum, those OCGTs, as they are called, contribute something like 2,000 megawatts. So that's not a negligible amount. But given the cost of crude oil and its derivatives like diesel, the cost of diesel is has been rocketing for some time, and that has serious implications for the cost factor as well. But we do want to reduce the level of load shedding. We do want to have predictability as far as load shedding is concerned, so that both households and businesses can plan their lives along those lines. And as I said, we will keep the country informed about access to money for Eskom in order to purchase the diesel that they actually require. At the same time, Chair, if I may take the liberty, I mentioned earlier on the Leader of Opposition and my engagement with him this morning, and I will repeat this in the chamber later this afternoon, who is claiming on public TV that I stopped him from going to Kusile. All I said to him as a matter of courtesy is work with us so that we can schedule your meeting, your visit properly. You can receive a proper briefing and the proper arrangements are made. But of course, when there's political grandstanding, those sorts of courtesies are not taken into account. So I've contributed to some of the questions that have been asked. And if you don't mind, I'm going to hand over to the CEO. And in a short while, I might have to disconnect from the committee, if that's okay. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Honourable Minister. I think the CEO will take over. You may leave any time you have to. You have attended to the questions that we particularly wanted you to attend to. Thank you. CEO, please come in.
Thank you, Honourable Chair. I've asked a few of the executives who are on the call as well to help with some of the answers that relate to their areas of operation. Chair, Honourable Chair, with regards to the question that was asked by Honourable Matafa, the issue, the 2.9, so let me just clarify the 3.1. Chair, with regards to the 315 locals. So what we were saying is that the long-standing locals, which actually effectively are broken locals that need to be fixed, the total number is 315 and the 21st of November. The locals that we have in the fleet is 1,971, inclusive of the 315. The 2.9 billion that we have requested from Treasury is to help us on the first hand to deal with returning to service this 315, to fix the 315. So that they're back in operation, bring us back to the 1,971 over the next 2 years or so. Then he asked the question is that if money was not a constraint, what would be the total number? My answer to the question for me would be based on one, the assumption, first of all, that we are opening up the network for third party access. So we can't continue to plan as if we will move every single inch of the volume that's available in the system. However, if you go by the fact that we effectively have 1,971 locals, we are looking to close off with CRRC as well as Alstom, BT Alstom, to take final delivery of their orders. That would get us to at least 2,230 locals in total in our fleet in the immediate. That's all I'm willing to sort of like say in the immediate, that's where we will end up at, is at 2,230. bearing in mind that the newer generation fleets have got much greater traction power. So with them, we need fewer locals per train set than what would have been the case with the older fleets that we have. Now, the issue of the capital investment decline, honorable members, I mean, if you look at the slide that we show you, what was the debt situation, as well as what was happening to revenue, as well as EBITDA, there was less and less free cash available to service the debt on the one hand, and also on the other hand, to also fund expansion programs. And that's really no other fancier reason for why there's been a decline in capital investment from Transnet. However, if you look at our plans going forward, the Durban Master Plan, the expansion of Durban Port from the current 2.7 to 3 million TEU container terminal to the 11.3, significant investment, which will definitely have multiplier effects over a period we anticipate between 10 and 12 years, we should be able to get to full capacity. We also have the LNG terminal in Richards Bay, which has already been advertised, and we should be coming up with an RFP either late this year or early in the next year. Also another expansion. Another expansion is the new manganese terminal that we will be building in Gqeberha as well, in Mucha itself, which also is an additional capacity expansion. So there are quite a lot of expansion projects, which are just at the ports as well, in TFR. In the case of TFR, with the expansion of the with the building of the new manganese terminal, 16 million tons, we would have to expand rail capacity by another 6 million tons as well. So there are quite a lot of expansion projects that we have planned, a lot of them in partnerships, and that's why the partnership that we've near closure on in Pier 2 in Durban at Durban Container Terminal, as well as the Ngqura Container Terminal, which will ensure that there's additional cash brought into the business. And the intention is to use that cash to modernize the equipment at the port. So the plan definitely is to grow investment. You indicate the loss through criminal action. Honorable Member Mafata, there's actually quite a lot of work. We've got quite a big team that helps to do the investigations on the one hand between our security. Must say we've been seeing a lot of success, both in the area of fuel theft as well as cable theft, where we are effectively making arrests. Now the issue is our ability to ensure that once the people are arrested, we are able to ensure that they end up in prison or fined. But recently, we were pleased to see somebody getting sentenced to 15 years. But there's a lot more work. We arrest many more people than they end up actually going through the court system. That, for us, remains quite a big concern. Nonkululeko, can I ask you to deal with some of the financial ones, and then I'll come back and pick up on some of the other operational questions.
Thank you, Portia, and good morning to the honourable person. Just to build on some of, and I think you've touched on some of the points around the financial performance. Honourable Chairperson, the financial performance is very much directly linked to the operational performance, and therefore some of the work that was highlighted in the slides that the GCE shared is critical to ensure that we get Transnet to its full potential in terms of the operational performance, which will then ensure that we see much better profitability and stability at the bottom line. At the moment, there are some business areas that we are seeing much improvement and much performance, but the issue to resolve around the locomotives will certainly drive better performance in terms of profitability and get us to much more stable levels. That then links to the question around the borrowing levels. We have, in the slide that we shared, have a target to remain between 40 and 50% of gearing of the balance sheet at any point in time to ensure that we continue to leverage and use people's money on balance sheet. But we don't want to get to the levels that would be uncomfortable and make it difficult for us to continue to borrow further. as a result of that, we are driving a strategy of paying the history of the debt that is already in the balance sheet. And because at the moment we're not generating enough cash from operations to be able to pay all the debt, we then go and refinance some of the debt that's maturing so that we basically request for it to be paid later in time whilst we continue to fix the operations and look for more cash generated from the business. The borrowings, Chair, would continue, but we are then looking at this off-balance sheet approach as well so that we can continue to support the GDP requirements of the country through these off-balance sheet structures where we would raise debt and but keep it off-balance sheet and work with partners to make sure that the projects and the capital expenditure continues to be activated and the balance sheet with debt that we cannot be able to manage. So therefore, we will continue to raise debt, but we are monitoring very closely the level at which it is at now. And as you would have noted in the slide, it is planned to go down. But as we contend with global challenges, at times it doesn't go at the level that we would want it to go in terms of speed. Chair, I think the other question was around whether we are underinsured and whether the floods have exposed us, and probably Advocate Kutia can also add to this point. We have a process with our insurers that we review our insurability and the level of insurance, and it's a balance between what we have to pay as premiums at any point in time and the eventualities that we may expect as disasters. And I think the Durban floods were quite at a level that it would be difficult to say we would be able to insure and expect those. But to the level that we are insured, it has contributed positively to us closing the gap and making sure we do the to ensure that they can be much stronger in case of these events. And the discussions with the insurers would continue to see where is the correct balance. So it is not a complete position of being underinsured rather than an issue of an event that was quite significant for the region. Chair, I think I've covered the financial related questions.
Chair, if I may then continue, I hope the issue, and Sandra, Advocate Kutia is responsible for the insurance, and maybe she can just talk a little bit about the climate when it comes to insuring SOEs and its assets. Sandra, are you able to come in?
Good morning, Honourable Chairperson and members of the committee. The question raised by the committee and the statements by the GCE is actually very pertinent, and pertinent not only to Transnet, but to all state-owned companies in South Africa. What we have been experiencing is a very constrained insurance market as a consequence of residual perceptions related diminished governance during the state capture period, but also as a result of the high degree of fossil fuel processing in our operations. This would apply equally to Eskom, for example. To the extent that Transnet transports fossil fuels, we find the international insurance market as reticent to engage with us as the extent to which we have exposure to fossil fuels directly influences their ratings in the international market. So I'm not suggesting that access to insurance is impossible, but the market has been narrowing down for state-owned companies. as a result of the high degree of fossil fuels in our operations, as well as perceptions associated with state capture. As a result, our first loss part is increasing, and the extent to which procured insured events are covered is that those thresholds are reducing quite dramatically, with the cost of insurance also conversely increasing at the same time.
Thanks, Sandra. Chair, if I just want to close off on this issue of insurance as well. If you recall, I mean, with us, with the looting that happened last year, and then we were subsequently hacked. And in fact, for Transnet, this is not the first damage that we've suffered as a result of flooding. I think it was the 2017 where KZN had those significant floods. And so what they look at is the size and the extent of our claims. And on the back of that, what we have to balance is the cost of the insurance on the one hand, and also setting aside additional funds for us to be able to fund ourselves should we meet an event of this sort. It's a constant struggle that we deal with on an annual basis, and also we're very cautious about how we proceed. But, you know, as we have to deal with these incidents that we had recently, we are constantly re-looking at how much investments we have to undertake ourselves vis-a-vis what we get from the private sector. I do want to come back to the questions that were asked by Honourable Serapin around the turnaround plan for Transnet, and just also around the question that he raised with regards to the article that's written about South Africa losing 3 billion rand at the port. I'll foreground the statement. I've also asked Jabu Mdaki, who is the CEO of TPT, who's also on the call, to just give some comfort on the performance of the ports and the fact that actually there is a turnaround that's happening. It's unfortunate that the headlines or stories are the stories that get told without actually context. And unfortunately, in that case of the City Press article, we were not asked for our comments. The use of Maputo Port in the South African system, to be frank, is important and is crucial. For Transnet, what it does mean is that the chrome and magnetite that we would be moving from Limpopo, from Steelport area, the shortest route to port, and from a logistics perspective, you always want to run the shortest route to port, is the port that goes right from Steelport across the board and through to Maputo. That's the most efficient routing. To you. So for us, it's not a loss necessarily, because what we look at is the benefit that we get by having to carry a smaller rolling stock in the form of locos and in the form of wagons. And to be very frank, the partnership that we've entered into between CFM and ourselves is absolutely crucial, because I do hope that we all are agreed that regional integration is an essential part of our economic strategy as South Africa. So that's the first point. But also, I thought it was important that Jabu Mdaki just give the committee a flavor of the performance of our port operations. Jabu, if you can just take a minute or two to talk to that, and then I'll come back to some of the questions that have been asked around BEE, Honourable Chair, and then move on to the other questions that have been asked by the other Honourable Members.
Thank you, Chief. Good morning, Honourable Chair and Honourable Members. With regard to the, my name is Jabu Mdaki, as introduced by the GCE. I'm the Chief Executive of the Transnet Port Terminals. We operate the largest terminals within the port system. The commodities that we handle will be the containers, auto, the bulk, as well as then the other, you know, break bulk. The area within, the space within which we operate and the performance that we are seeing, it is crucial for us to get to what one can regard as the pre-COVID levels, and the volumes growth that we are seeing and performing at is reaching that level. What is also important, I think, as alluded to by the Minister as well as the GCE, the space that we operate within, I mean, there's a lot of work that we're doing with regard to the turnaround and rebuilding our efficiencies. Within that space, one cannot ignore the fact that, you know, we had the floods this year, even with the floods. When one looks at the time-sensitive commodity, which will be your agri exports, for example, that peak between the months of May to September and early October, we were able to still service that sector, and so we saw the growth of 3.95% in that sector, and we're able to get those volumes out in spite of the floods that we experienced, and as part of the resilience and the recoveries that we had. This was over and above what we were able to achieve last year, where we still experienced the unrest as well as the hacking, and we saw a growth of 12% with regard to those time-sensitive commodities, which is quite important for the South African economy, again, within the citrus and the agri-exports. On the volumes themselves and the turnaround, we are seeing an improvement in terms of what we are able to achieve in terms of servicing the vessels as well as the other associated industries. One can talk to the current performance. I mean, we are in a phase where we've just come out of a strike, and what was important for us is then how quickly are we able to recover from that strike, because that also talks to the level of the resilience that we have and the efficiencies that we're able to deliver within the port system. Yeah, within a space of within a space of about 2 weeks, we're able to recover within the container ports in terms of the recovery. That will be your Pier 1 in Durban, the Port Elizabeth, as well as the CTCT in Cape Town. The only one that we are still then recovering, it will be Pier 2 in Durban. And again, on that one, on a positive note, from our projected recovery of 90 days, we have been able to reduce that to just over 50 days. And we're still seeing a lot of improvement within that. So that is showing a lot of improvements within our port system. Our main area of focus is the time that we take to turn around the vessels. But for that to be able to be effected, it's important that we understand that we work in a supply chain environment. So the marine part of it needs to play its part, and we're engaging with our stakeholders there. But what is also more important, as I spoke about us being able to service the agri sector, is that we have formed a very close working relationship with those sectors. We still need to be able to have the associated industries as well as, because we're seeing a lot of trucks coming through our port systems, those associated industries that they also transform and be able to adjust to the working environment that we'll design to be able to turn around the port systems. We cannot continue to have, the trucks that, for example, concentrate on operating within the day, and then after hours at night as well as weekends, the port are underutilized, which then contributes to the congestion that we're seeing within the ports. Those are the ongoing discussions that we're having with the industry, because the entire port system need to be able to turn around for us to be able to realize the efficiencies that we desire. While TPT is the main player within that industry, we need to have the associated industries as well playing that industry. But we can assure the committee that we are able to handle the volumes that the country is requiring, and we are able to deliver and improve on the efficiencies. It's an ongoing business. As we speak now, we are going to be entering the export season in the Cape Town, that is of the table grape season, as well as the blueberries. And we are ready for that, and we are engaging with the industry in that part of the world to ensure that we continue delivering on those efficiencies. We have made sufficient equipment to be available to execute those efficiencies. So there's a lot of work that we are doing, and it is also receiving positive feedback from the industry. Thank you.
Thank you for the indulgence, Honourable Chair. So I just want to go through the question that was asked around BEE. Of our total rated expenditure as Transnet, we spend about 2.29 billion rand. Of that 29 billion, about 43% goes to black, to triple BEE companies just on their own. And then women owned enterprises are at 25.4%. So the long and the short of it, in as far as the procurement, we basically still apply. We still apply preferential procurement because we had, after the court case that stopped Treasury, we were able to get exemption and then get the policy, the board to accept the policy which aligned with the original Preferential Procurement Act. But the real question, as I was understanding the Honourable Member, and that actually is an area that we are working at, and it's not as fast as we'd like to see it, to be very honest, is the issue of access to capacity on rail for Black-owned businesses, women-owned, and emerging players in general. Because unfortunately, and Chair, this ties back to the question that we, the issue that we're raising around how do you find infrastructure. As a result of the 1987 decision taken by the De Villiers Commission, basically, which said government must stop investing on rail in we have had to approach the private sector to help us fund it. And when the private sector helps us fund it, they put conditions of either we want a long contract for certainty or we want reduced tariffs. And when it's a long contract for certainty, we are obligated to respect the law and contractual law in South Africa. So if only as capacity either becomes available, which is additional to the original, that we are able to bring in more Black emerging players, or secondly, if we are able to actually undertake by the larger companies, established major players in the economy. And only at that point would we then be in a position to start bringing in emerging players. It's a vexed problem, Honourable Members. And in fact, the sooner we solve the question of funding the infrastructure, the sooner that we as Transnet would be able to drive the inclusion rail is about half the price of road, and that's despite the fact that road is fundamentally subsidized relative to road. So in as far as the question around...
Group C, just on that one, let me, when you're still on that one, the accessibility to your infrastructure, just talk to... of Richard's Bay to try and my life at Transnet. There was that attempt to try and expand the port for access of smaller miners and so on. What's happening with that now that we are touching on it? Sorry to interrupt you.
No problem, Jay. No, so Richard's Bay is also one of those. The terminal is owned privately by all of the by a lot of the mining companies, the majors, basically, as we call them, own RBCT as the terminal and the operations. There is the DMRE a few years ago in the 2000s, late 2000s, secured what is called Quattro, which is a 4 million ton allocation. The total capacity that they're able to move right now is 91 million tons at the port. On rail, we were supposed to get up to 81 million tons, and we are currently on rail on the infra side at about 71 million tons. And if we had made, and there's an investment that we need to close off with Eskom around electrification, we would actually end up at 81 million tons. Now, the decision that we made as Transnet is that we will not exceed 81 million tons, partly for the reasons that Sandra has already indicated around funders. And in fact, as we speak right now, no funder is interested in funding anything that we have which uses coal in any shape or moves coal or anything. So there's no money that's available. So we said we would stay at 81 because we were also trying to ensure that Transnet would continue being fundable. Now back to the situation. As a result of the unavailability of locals, the 22 E's that we would be getting from the Chinese, which we use on the coal line, you'll recall, I think it was earlier this year, it caused quite a great consternation and it was all over the papers. We declared a force majeure with the coal mining companies as a result of the unavailability of locals to say that we can only move 60 million tons. Now, the contracted tonnage that we have with the RBCT miners, who actually also financed the expansion of the capacity, the movement to the 81 million tons, so related to this question around how you fund it, who partly financed that, was that the minimum volumes that we would have to move for them is, I think, 71 million tons or 74 million tons. And only when we have moved their 71 million tons are we at liberty, frankly, to bring in additional players into the system. So as a result of the force majeure, we then renegotiated the contract and we ended at 60 million tons. So once again, we have an obligation that we have to meet their 60 million tons. Once we've met their 60 million tons, inclusive in the 60 million tons would be the 4 million tons for Quattro members, would we really be in a position to expand and bring in black players? So that's the situation. But it's frankly a situation in much of the heavy ore system where we have long offtake contracts. Chair, I hope I've been clear. But I think TFR and the team at TFR would be more than happy to take the Honourable Chair and members just to understand how this the contracting work works, what we are trying to do to ensure that there's more space created for emerging miners and black players, whilst taking into account the risks of failure on their side and the risk that we are able to carry as Transnet going forward. I hope I've been clear, Chair.
Perfect.
Okay. So if I may continue then on the issue of access, as I've answered that, on the skills development side, we have an extensive infrastructure for skills development as Transnet. I mean, virtually in every single town where we have an operation, we have a bit of a training center. But as a result of the financial performance of Transnet over the years, we cut back in terms of training, number one. Number two, we also have another problem, is that whenever we train people, there's an anticipation that we're going to hire them. But what we'd really like to see is that they get hired in the industry. Now, I have to say, and this is partly one of the reasons why we are such firm supporters of the national white papers and bringing in private players, is that in terms of the rail sector, there'll be more than just Transnet or Prasa as the employer, because these train operating companies would also be able to hire this capacity that we would have created. I want to come back to the questions that were asked by Honorable Peters around the German case study. For us, why we have pushed really hard on Germany as the model is that, as we all know, Germany remains the most robust export-orientated economy in Europe, and bar China is probably the strongest exporter. What you look at, and some of you members and you, Honorable Chair, I imagine would know this very well, is that given the fact that under WTO, you can't directly subsidize the production of the commodity. So what do the Germans do? They directly subsidize the input costs that manufacturers face. A significant input cost is logistics and transportation. That's the reason why the government gives Deutsche Bahn 63 billion euros for this period, 2000 to 2029, which is basically 30 years. Why they cross-subsidize in that fashion the economy. And that's why we went for that model. And we were absolutely clear that we were not going to follow the British model, which is basically a private sector that there's, in fact, it's not even quite that, because it's a franchise model that they effectively have a single rail operator. Chair, you raised the question of the way that we position that, are we seeing the creation of another company? Not at all. If you look at Deutsche Bahn, it's a single, it's still one company. And inside Deutsche Bahn, there is ring-fenced an infrastructure division. And then there are the operations. In the case of the Germans, incidentally, not only does Deutsche Bahn run freight, they also run passenger. In our case, passenger is separated out and quite comfortable with that as the continuing situation. Agree completely that we need to have a much stronger working relationship between ourselves and Prasa on the infrastructure maintenance so that the standards right across the system are kept at the same level and that you are able to move passengers. I mean, it's the most regressive thing in South Africa at present, that we have a rail system that's not able to move workers, which is actually, as we know, the least cost way for workers to move to work. The question that the Honorable Peters asked is that what do we anticipate as the percentage participation for the private sector as well as black companies as well? Our anticipation is that we would, as Transnet, end up being at the 60-70% of ultimately, that's ultimately, of the operations on rail, with the 30 or so percent being for private sector. One of the big issues, and you would have, honorable members would have seen this as well in the press, is the argument particularly led by ARIA, which is an association saying that the 2 years are not sufficient for the slot sales that we went out on. Now, we are well aware of the fact that the 2 years is not the ultimate only number, let me put it that way, because they actually, we will continue having 2 year leases available, 1 year leases available as well. But what we are looking at is how do we design the system in such a way that we avoid once again the exclusion of emerging players and black players. Now, if you consider this, if you can own 30 trucks, you can become a train operating company. The only challenge that you then would have is, do you have access to a train? And you don't have to own the train, the rolling stock and the wagons. The way that the German system works is that you are able to buy a blocked train. So you can say, I need a train of 50 wagons that starts from Emmerdaden going through to Durban, that we would then be able to provide for you either ourselves, who can hold the train, or another train operating company. That in the German system is regarded as a train operating company. Not everyone needs to own the infrastructure. But one of the things that we have done is Transnet, with the support of the board and the shareholder, is to move fast towards the establishment of a leasing company. We make sense as the basis for a leasing company. We have the most wagons, we have the most locomotives that we would be able to use and fix and make available on the lease stock to operators who come into the system. So what we were doing with the 2 years, we wanted to understand what changes we would have to make internally in Transnet to be able to sell the slots, what would be the appetite from industry, and from what we've received, amazing appetite in South Africa. And then after this, in this intervening period, in the next year or so, we should then be able to indicate a totally different framework, and we anticipate that you should have 10-year contracts that will be available, but making sure that new entrants are always able to use the system going forward. Chair, on the, so I hope I've answered the question on whether we see a separation. We don't see a separation. We don't see it as incompatible to have government funding infrastructure with Transnet or TFR continuing to being the integrated rail operator. Recall the national paper also sees the establishment of an economic regulator. And the economic regulator is the ultimate arbiter on whether we have fairly or unfairly priced the third party. Yes, indeed. What you want to get to is a situation where the infrastructure operator sets the price for the sale of the slot. Whether we buying it as Transnet or a third party is buying it, it gets sold at exactly the same price. Now, that's important for us as Transnet, because you finally start getting complete view of the revenue, and that we're optimizing both the assets that we own, which is the infrastructure, as well as the assets that we own for the operations. But we no longer constrain the industry or South Africa to the extent that we only operate this much because of the revenue that we have available. We will operate, or the funding that we have available to fund the capex and the maintenance. We will run what we are able to run, but then immediately make available the balance for the private sector to run. We hope, and we think it should be the case, Chair, to see that a lot more of the trucks, in particular on the N3, but not only on the N3, the number of complaints that we get from smaller towns. I mean, if you've ever gone to Amersfoort, where trucks are on roads for coal, if you're in the Eastern Cape, the manganese trucks, that direct truck towards Gqeberha, is amazing. And that's some of the issues that we have to deal with. And we think this way we should be able to have a seat to see a larger shift from road to rail going forward. The estimated loss as a result of the strike, we wouldn't have calculated for industry. We just calculated for ourselves, and it was sizable, both for us, because an 11-day strike would take away quite a lot of revenue on our side. And this will come out, this, unfortunately, honourable members, is a closed period, so I can't indicate those kinds of figures yet. But once the closed period is over, we would be able to talk honestly about that. Also, the workers would have suffered quite significant losses because we had a no-work, no-pay policy. Fortunately, we were able to close the strike. And in the end, having a three-year agreement is much more useful, not only for us as Transnet, but to create certainty, but also for the workers as well, so that they have certainty and that we're able to charge correctly. Honourable Tenzan, the issue of court cases, I think, as we've indicated, we've worked systematically on these, and I suppose we will wait. Confidential matters which would be in front of the court, and once we get guidance from them, we will respond appropriately. Honourable Chair, the question that you asked about the recovery, the tariffs that we charge, you know, at one level, really, it's only because of the tradition of rail and heavy and the pricing to containers and wagons. So really, there's nothing in law. There's nothing that has actually ever stopped us from ensuring that our tariffing methodology is a tariffing methodology that takes into account these higher value-added commodities, which are low weight. So it's an area of research that we've started to look at. And in fact, no opportunity is better than this one, where there's a process to establish an economic regulator, because then we can be able to approach the economic regulator and have a new model. And to be very honest, we were talking to the Spanish recently, and they themselves are struggling with this issue of weight vis-a-vis value, actually, at the end of the day, that we use for pricing of tariffs. Chair, you asked us about what's happening to the blue train. We were recently approached by the Department of Transport. And let me not say recent, about a year or so ago. They approached us and they indicated to us that our mandate is Transnet to move freight. And because our mandate is Transnet is to move freight and theirs to passenger, we've got to do the right thing. So we are in... would be effectively with the Department of Transport and Transport with PRASA effectively and the Department of Transport. Chair, I hope we have answered all of the questions. If we have missed any Yes. Happy to answer those questions as well, Chair. Can I just, last one, which is related, because this is an issue that gets raised every time, this issue of derelict vacant properties that belong to Transnet all over the country. We had to deal with a little problem because they, in fact, maybe it was a misunderstanding in the system, but as you know, with rules and laws, because of Clause 2117 in the Constitution, right, which says that our procurement must be transparent, open, and fair. It was not, it creates a bit of a consternation that if you have somebody who walks in and gives an unsolicited bid in effect, and they say, we've seen a building in town X that we want to have access to, can we rent it? We created a serious problem on the procurement side, is that can we, can't we? Is it transparent or not transparent? So we've finally been able to solve that problem between just listing all of the properties that we have, that we know that belong to us that are vacant on our website, but also increasingly we're putting out signs everywhere where there's a derelict and open building or a vacant building to say, if you're looking to lease this, please call us, because that effectively is advertising. And so that would close that loop. So we are in a process where we're working very fast on that. There is also, though, properties which are still between PRASA and Transnet, which were tied up in the transfer when PRASA was being created. And I think in the last couple of months, we've now finally agreed the ultimate list between ourselves and PRASA. And all of the stations where there were passenger trains, those would be shifting completely to PRASA. Thank you, Chair. I think that was all I was aware of.
Yes, thank you, SEO. There's Honorable Kaiso. There's a question and clarification. Quickly, Honorable Kaiso.
Yes, thank you very much, and I'm sorry for coming so very late. I only picked up during the explanation of the question. I wanted to ask around the issue of the 1987 Commission recommendation. Now, given that we have an economic recovery plan, don't you think that maybe it was wise that you rework that it should not counter the intention of the economic recovery plan, that there should be now no longer investment or infrastructure in as far as rail is concerned? It should rather focus on road infrastructure. So I think the message that that now it reverses all the opportunities for, you know, the economy to can, you know, grow as you expect now that we are struggling about train or rail infrastructure, you know, to bring it back. And on cable theft, lastly, Chairperson, on cable theft, I think there was a recommendation sometime from the CSIR that Transnet has actually not engaged them with regards to the security, what is done, and any of the role of CSIR. Why are you not engaging it? Thank you very much.
Thank you. A quick group CEO.
Chair, I mean, on the 1987 the Villiers recommendation, that's why we say we support the new National Rail policy paper, because that one reverses the 1987 decision and says that government must fund infrastructure. So I think that ticks the box. And we're working quite closely with the Department of Transport to start figuring out, because what then would have to happen, they need to work on a network statement in effect. And on the back of the network statement, they set the standards on what should be the maintenance over a period of time. And on the back of that, we work on what is in as far as cable with the CSIR on all of our security interventions. Thank you very much.
Thank you. I think that all the questions have been attended to on the blue train. I think Brasa should know what they're getting from you guys. Okay, let me just to summarize for Transnet, as I said at the beginning, I think it's the first time we interact with you, but at least your group CEO is a seasoned government executive. She knows how we work here. That's why Honorable Peter has kept on referring to you, Portia, as DG, because we're still fixated on that, your previous responsibility at DTIC. Okay, what's going to happen now? Let's just to make sure that we all understand the process. Obviously, the special appropriation bill was presented by the Minister of Finance on the 26th of October during his MTDBS. So what it is, he was making a proposal to Parliament with that bill, because many bills, they must be law, which must be passed by Parliament, both houses, and signed by the President. So this is a money bill, proposing to Parliament that that's the amount of money that is requesting Parliament to approve. So what happens when that bill comes to Parliament? Parliament read the board, in your case, refers this bill to us, the Standing Committee on Appropriation, read perhaps your investment committee but one of your subcommittees at the board, who then engage with the bill. Amongst other things that we do is to interact with the parties which are involved, hence your presence here. So the questions that were asked by the members of the committee, they are meant to help the committee decide whether the committee agrees or disagrees with you. Once the committee has decided, it will make a report, go back and report to the National Assembly, read the board, where we'll make a point for or against the bill that was presented by the Minister of Finance. So the Minister of Finance presents a proposal to Parliament. So next week, I think Thursday next week, we have submitted our report to Parliament as to what we think and what conditions and all the things that we think should accompany the bill. And then the Parliament will have an opportunity to debate on the bill. If the answer is yes, then it will have to proceed to the National Council of Provinces. I just thought let me share with you that with that process, since some of you might not have interacted with the processes of approval as far as government and Parliament are concerned. But thank you very much, Group CEO and your team for the engagement. And we're wishing you all the best. You know the importance of Transnet in as far as the economy of this country is concerned. I think we find ourselves in most cases a too big to fail type of a situation and a moral hazard, a problem when we deal with companies like yourselves. But yeah, thank you very much for the presentation. Good luck.
Thank you very much, Chair. Thank you, honourable members. Thank you very much. Bye.
Bye.
Thank you, Chair. Bye-bye.
Mashile?
Yes, Chair. Mashile? Chair.
Then we must consider the report now.
Yes.
That's the next agenda item on the on our oversight visit to the department. Draft report of the Standing Committee on Appropriations. Yeah, I think that's a better font. Yeah. draft report on of the Standing Committee on Appropriations on its oversight visit to the Department of Defense and its institutions in the Gauteng province from 19 to the 22nd of April 2022. So this was sent to us. It has been with us for some time. If there's anything that you are picking, you'll stop me. But I'll then request Mr. Mashile to move page by page. Right. So let's start with page one. Move, Mashile. This is page one. If there's anything you want to, let me just check. Just stop, yes. Mr. Mashile. Okay. Are your pages numbered?
They are numbered. No, they're not numbered in here. All right. But I will move like this.
Let's move. Must number your pages.
Okay. Right?
So one of the things that you are saying that we can't, you need to number. Yeah, okay, let's go.
Okay.
What now on page two? Let's go. We're now on page three.
Page three.
Page four. Next page. Next page. Next page. Next page. Next page. Next page. Okay, all members, I presented to you the report of our oversight visit to the Department of Defense and its institutions. Can I have the mover for the adoption of the report?
I so move.
Honorable Peters moves. Seconda.
Matafa seconds.
Matafa seconds. Any other view?
Chair.
Yes. The report has been seconded. Is it another view? The report has been
seconded. No, it's not another view necessarily, Chair. It's just on the alignment and the numbering of the pages.
Yeah.
Okay, let me finish that. This one, there's a mover. There's a seconder. So can we then adopt? There's no other view. So the report is adopted. Okay. As the true reflection of our site, a visit to Department of Defense and its institutions. Honorable Kaiso, come in.
No, sir. Honorable Chair, it has been closed. I wanted to say the sentence must be aligned and the numbering of page must be done in the report.
Yeah. Okay. That's Mashile.
Yes, it's noted.
It's something what you said that the pages must be
aligned and numbered
and properly aligned. Okay.
Yes.
Thank you, honorable members. That takes us to the end of that agenda item. So what's going to happen to the report now is going to be a seat. Am I right?
Yes,
sir. Okay. To go to Parliament National Assembly. The next agenda item.
Announcement.
Yes.
The next meeting will be held on Friday. We are meeting with the standing committee, joint committee on the. We're going to have a public hearing with the select committee. We're going to have public hearings on the appropriations adjustment. The appropriation adjustment bill on Friday.
And also the special appropriations on both bills.
Public yes.
hearings on both bills. Yeah. Okay.
Okay.
Number two, honorable members. Let's make sure that we give the organizers of our study tour everything they are looking for. I saw a communication talking about the insurance thing. Let's just make sure that everything they require we give them. And secretariat can also check from your side, because I saw some other members saying that they have already sent the things, but from your side, you're saying that you haven't received them. Let's just make sure that we pick up the phone and talk to our members if there's anything which is still missing. We are leaving on Friday next week.
Noted, Chair. Okay.
Yeah. Or remember that, yes, or
just the last point, Chair, on this trip. Other than insurance and the passport and what was the first one that we submitted?
Abridged CV.
Else are we expected to do? I've seen something about KEA, KEA. Am I supposed to do that? But also, are we expected to do what is this thing?
Vaccination.
Vaccination. Thank you, Chair.
Yes, Chair.
Hello,
Chair.
No.
Yeah, these are the items that we need to start to do. If there's any other thing, members will be consulted. They will be contacted individually. But as far as we know, the most key issues that were needed were the abridged CV, as well as the insurance documents that were supposed to be filled. The issue of the vaccination, I will confirm with my colleagues, and we'll come back to the members as well.
Thank you. Let's just...
Thank you. I've spoken to Mr. Kim from the Korean Embassy in Pretoria. And he said that South Africa, we don't really need any, and there are no specific things that we need. But he did advise us when it comes to the COVID, those who did go for their vaccinations, just to have their vaccination cards available. Should on the other side, he's not expecting it to happen, but should it happen and they ask for it, just have it available, all those who did go for their vaccinations. But as it stands, they left. All those requests in September already, so we can just go there. I don't know whether we are required to wear masks. I just need to double check with him on that one. But as far as the COVID-19 and that stuff, he says no, there's nothing. They lifted all those requirements. Thank you, Chair.
Okay, which airline are we using? Do you know? Not yet.
Chair, maybe not from that one. I'm not sure. Not sure, Chairperson.
Okay. No. That's fine, guys. If there's anything that we need to know, please inform us, né? So that you don't make us run on in the last minute.
Just lastly, where are you flying from? From Cape Town or from? Because now that the debate is this side, I think we will be finishing Thursday a little bit later. Initially, my travel, this thing, Chair, I said I'll be traveling from Kimberley. So I don't know, because things are changing now.
Honourable Peters, just communicate with Secretariat, with the new things to say exactly where you'll be traveling from. All of us, let's just make sure that where you will be, maybe in Cape Town and so on. I will be in the debate, but I'll still be flying from Johannesburg. So just to make sure that everything it's properly planned.
Yeah, Chair, thanks. Sorry for indulgence. I have been dealing with that this morning too, because I could pick up that I will no longer use Durban. Unomfundo Castle is working on it. The other thing which she said I should resubmit, I wonder if members will take care of all of that too. I had already submitted my travel insurance application for them, but now I had to change it because of the dates. So maybe the question maybe was before, what have we submitted? We may have to all cross-check with Nofundo. We may think that we have submitted only to find that we have to resubmit.
Okay. Thank you, Romlinda. Honorable members, just check. But Darren, can you just ask Nomfus to contact with other members who are still have got things that are missing, just say, honorable member, so and so, can I have 1, 2, 3, so that we